Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments. Spotlight Libya, where among the refugees from sub-Saharan Africa are women and children. A conversation with Bill Viola, a video artist who met with Pope Benedict XVI on Saturday, 21st of November. And unveiling one of Rome's best-kept secrets, that's the artwork of Andrea Pozzo, at the English College here in Rome. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. At the Vatican Press Office on Friday, Pope Benedict XVI's message for the World Day dedicated to migrants and refugees, which falls on the 17th of January 2010, was released. The theme is migrants and refugee minors. So staying with this theme, I'd like you to share with me a conversation I had recently with the Vicar Apostolic of Tripoli in Libya. He's Bishop Giovanni Innocenzo Martinelli. Libya is part of a continent where there are over 10 million displaced people, numbers indicative of a phenomenon which reflects a socio-political injustice across this vast area. And as we know, it's a nation which thousands of immigrants reach each year from sub-Saharan Africa, many fleeing poverty or even war, all are in quest of a better future. Those who reach the Centre of Social Services of the Church in Tripoli, there are other centres as well, come from countries such as Sudan, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Congo, Nigeria. Most are illegal immigrants who have no access to legal assistance and healthcare. Many are jailed there, others deported. Others still try to reach the coast of Italy on rickety boats, on which ensuing tragedy often occurs. Among them are women and children.
Have many women and children, and this is, I think, the problem. This is a real problem to help them. We feel that is really a responsibility that we can imagine. These poor people, they have to arrive from the desert.
And that was the voice of Bishop Giovanni Martinelli. One hears tragic stories of what happens in Libya in the refugee camps.
I think there are many things that are instrumentalized. I don't believe that really there is a tragic position and situation. No, I visit myself and the sister visit the prisons. They live normally and like other prison, of course, there is no freedom, but they respect us to help them. And also the director of the prison help us just to face the different situation and the problem, health problem, but there is no tragedy in the prison.
But not everybody is in prison. You run social service camps for these immigrants,
Yeah, we visit only the camps where we have the migrants, and we have a camp for illegal person and the camp for criminal. It's different prison. No? You can imagine the Libyans have to face this enormous presence of the Africans coming from different countries and rejected also from Italy, you know.
They are rejected both by their own countries and eventually by Europe. Are they in despair?
We can say no. I don't want to say because they are young people. They are young people and they try to go in the other country. Sure, Libya is not the place to stay forever. If they are rejected today, maybe they will try tomorrow again. They are willing to go absolutely in other place. And we feel that we have to provide in the Europe or other country, have to provide for them. Because especially for Eritrea, they have no chance. They don't want to go back. They are willing to find the new place for the new future. But they are young people.
They're women and children.
Yeah, many, yeah. Have many women and children. And this is, I think, the problem, this real problem, to help them. And we have a team, the nuns and sisters, who are doing the best just to assist them. We feel that is really a responsibility from human institution to help these people in this country.
A lot of these women are exploited, and the men too, but in particular the women, no?
Yeah, we cannot say in detail all this situation, but we can imagine they pass from desert and different country, different places. We'd have to pay. And this is a pity to say this, but we can imagine these poor people, poor women, they have to arrive from the desert. I have to say one thing, the Libyan authority, they try the best, they protect them. And they are also NGO, Libyan NGO, who are doing also together with other institution, human institution, to help them.
Oh, some of these are political refugees, no? And they're not granted political exile in Libya.
They are political refugees, yeah. They try to have a document as a refugee, to have identity, because many, they have no passport, no nothing. And we hope that their document help them to find a way and to assist them, especially in the hospital.
Why do they all go to Libya?
Because first of all, they accept them. It is not forbidden to enter in Libya. Libya is open, and Libya is tolerant. A country can offer, if they are willing to work, to offer a job, and the possibility also eventually to go to Europe.
I noticed that you're a Franciscan. You're
yes.
from the Order of Friars Minor,
yes,
is that
yes.
right? What does this mean to you in your job there?
Francis was a man who followed Jesus in poverty and simplicity, and also in the desire to have a pure dialogue with the friends, with everybody, and especially the Muslim. I feel with these people, the poor, in this context, the Muslim context, to realize a community of prayer, community of dialogue as a church, really according the will of Saint Francis, no? Francis, free man who loved God and the creature, to realize the bridge between the poor and the rich, the power of love in the way of dialogue.
You were listening there to the Vicar Apostolic of Tripoli in Libya, Bishop Giovanni Innocenzo Martinelli. My thanks go to him. On a totally different note, on Saturday 21st of November, Pope Benedict XVI met with artists from across the world, so from different cultures, religions and traditions, in the Sistine Chapel. Over 200 of them from different artistic disciplines, among them a well-known video artist from the United States. He's Bill Viola. He began by telling me he felt this meeting with the Pope had been a significant one, simply because in contemporary terms, artists have no longer felt connected with the Church.
From the time of Michelangelo and Raphael, things have changed a lot, and I think artists have felt no longer In contemporary terms, especially in the recent history, they felt no longer connected with this institution.
That relationship between church and art, he stressed, needs new life breathed into it. One of the descriptions that particularly surprised me was his description of the Enlightenment period. Well, I knew that that time in history was very much a world of words where images and the emotional side of things had lost out. But Bill Viola described it rather interestingly as being a moment of cages or boxes.
That's when they put knowledge in boxes, in these little cabinets, Wunderkammers, cabinets of wonder. And all the things of nature, of the creation, were put in separate boxes. And when you go to the zoo, you see the giraffes and the elephants, but they're all in their own. And this is not the way nature works. It's not the way the universe works. So in our time now is we have to destroy the boxes. We have to break them. We have to realize everything is connected in the deepest way, the deepest, deepest way.
Well, when Bill Viola says that artists are no longer keepers of cages, he also claims they're keepers of vision. This is a time of healing, of bringing things together, something he claims is happening at all kinds of different levels. So I asked him what needs to be done to work towards that vision.
What we need right now is not to look at differences of each of us or each of our beliefs or anything, but to look at the similarities. We're all human, you know? And I think this time of bringing people together is not just a nice idea, you know, from the hippie times or something, but what it is it's necessary completely for our future on this earth.
Bill Viola was full of surprises for me. He really is an artist who's already established a connection between the church and art. Where? Well, in London.
I've been asked to create two permanent video altarpieces with plasma screens, either side of the choir aisles. And that's I'm starting that project early next year. It's going to take about a year and a half. It's a very big project. So, you know, I've done a few things in churches as time goes on. Art museums and churches have a very important connection. You see how people behave in art museums? Very similar when they come to a church.
You've been sitting in the Sistine Chapel. How do you relate to Michelangelo's artwork there?
Oh, he's just extraordinary. I spent quite a bit of time today looking at it while we were waiting for the Holy Father, and there's no question he's a genius.
Do you feel you have a responsibility as an artist?
Oh, sure. I have a responsibility to be truthful and to be authentic in the gift I've been given about beauty, the importance of beauty. You know, the term beauty is also another one of these huge terms.
Let the beauties that you express by your God-given talents always direct the hearts of others to glorify the creature, the source of all that is good.
And when my mother died and I saw her literally take her last breath and she looked terrible, it was horrible for my brother and I. But I saw this beauty there, you know. It's not about the pretty face, you know. The beauty's in here. It goes right in the deepest way. And her death, her last breath, her sunken face was one of the most beautiful images I've ever seen.
And a big thank you there to video artist from the United States, Bill Viola, for taking the time to speak to us there. Meanwhile, last week here in Rome, the Pontifical Gregorian University, together with the Austrian Historical Institute and the Biblioteca Herziana, sponsored a conference focusing on the figure of Andrea Pozzo, the Jesuit artist and architect of illusion, who was born in the Italian city of Trento in 1642. And who died exactly 3 centuries ago. At this conference, one of Rome's best-kept secrets was unveiled. A secret connected to this artist's work at the Venerable English College here in Rome. A place transformed into a seminary in 1579, and first established back in 1362 as a hospice for pilgrims in Rome. That's what we know. What we don't really know is how Andrea Pozzo, famous to Romans and tourists for his ceiling paintings in the Jesuit churches of the Gesù or St. Ignatius, got to paint in an English seminary. The story begins in the 17th century, when the English monarch's representative here in Rome establishes himself at the college. He's Cardinal Philip Howard, a Dominican, who sets about sorting out communal living space. At a time when the premises of the college were in a sorry state. And that's how art history professor Carol Richardson of the Open University in the UK, one of the speakers at the conference taking place at the Pontifical Gregorian University last week,
began unraveling her secret.
By the 1680s, the buildings that they were living in were basically 14th and 15th century buildings. They were very old, they were very grotty, and they really needed reconstruction. So what Howard did was invest in extending the property of the English College, which is right in the historic centre of Rome behind the Brigittine Convent. He added a bit to the building which was his own private palace, which he then left to the college, and it's now actually incorporated into the college buildings. Out of Cardinal Howard's interest in the communal practices of the college, for the first time it had a library, it had a proper refectory, it got a Jesuit chapel to go alongside the National Church of St. Thomas of Canterbury.
So a Dominican called a Jesuit in?
The Jesuits were given the English College in 1579 when it was set up as a seminary in the hospice properties. The Jesuits, though, never actually controlled the English College. They were only ever administrators of the college between 1579 and the suppression of the Jesuit order in 1773. And that takes me on to the next part of the story at the end of the 17th century. Cardinal Howard died in 1694. Now, by that time, the crown in England had gone back again to a Protestant monarch, and the Stuarts were just about to be kicked out of the country, so all of it was going pear-shaped. There was no cardinal protector then attached back to the English college, so for about a decade, between the death of Cardinal Howard and the next cardinal protector, who was appointed in 1706, the Jesuits actually had the English college to themselves, and it was a really, really unusual period. And I think that's how Andrea Pozzo got involved. It's the one time where the Jesuits had reason to recreate the college as a very Jesuit college. Remember, it wasn't actually a Jesuit college. They were the staff, but they didn't actually have control over the properties.
So getting to Andrea Pozzo, how did he move in?
There's no specific details of how the connections were made, but the students at the English College, they stayed in the college and they had some classes in the college, specifically how to deal with the Protestant menace. But their day-to-day classes were undertaken at the Collegio Romano, the great Jesuit college right in the centre of Rome. Andrea Pozzo taught in the Collegio Romano. So the connections are, I think, fairly straightforward. Both staff and students of the English College would have met Andrea Pozzo as one of the members of staff at the college at which they were studying.
Can you describe Andrea Pozzo's work for me? I know that Baroque art is in the eye of the beholder, as it were. So you're the spectator for a moment. Can you tell me what you see?
When you get drawn into the artwork of Andrea Pozzo in the college, what is this artwork anyway, and where is it exactly?
One's a beautiful Assumption of the Virgin in the smaller of the two churches, the Martyrs' Chapel. You go in, and because Andrea Pozzo is very clever with his manipulation of space, the ceiling of this chapel is actually quite low, but the way he's painted the Assumption of the Virgin, you walk into the chapel and first of all you see the apostles around the empty tomb, and then you see the Virgin in the most beautiful golden light being taken up into heaven. Now, this is actually not very far above your head, but Andrea Pozzo has been so clever with the space, you feel as though you were one of the apostles looking up at the Assumption. In the refectory, which is exactly the same shape as the Martyrs' Chapel, there's a representation of George and the dragon, and George is on his horse killing the dragon, and it does the same thing because Andrea Pozzo is so clever with the manipulation of space. He's actually tilted the scene in two dimensions, perspectivally, so you don't have to crane your neck to see it. The horse and St. George sitting on it, if you like, comes towards you just as you go into the space. It's the immediacy. He makes the most of actually quite a small and limited space.
Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't know much about the English College and Andrea Pozzo. But what I'd stumbled on in amazement many years back was a trompe-l'œil in rooms where St. Ignatius once lived, worked and prayed.
So, rather daringly, I ventured to ask a question. Fortunately, I timed it just right. Let's listen. He's a master of illusion. In the English colleges, there are no trompe-l'œil or things like that, are there?
Well, actually, and this is something that I'm going to reveal for the first time at the conference, there's a third aspect to Andrea Potsrow's contribution to the decoration of the English College, and that's a fresco in the garden, and that is a trompe-l'œil. It's a representation taken from a treatise that Andrea Potsrow wrote, the Treatise on Perspective.
Well, I heard Professor Richardson toss off the words treatise on perspective, as if we should all know about that. Well, naturally we should, but as it happens, we're not all learned Inner Circle Potsrow scholars. So realising this was an essential passage, I asked about this document. It's very famous, this treatise on perspective, isn't it?
Yes, and it's actually been reissued as part of the events around the conference and the anniversary of the death of Andrea Potsrow, which all of these events are commemorating. But one of the scenes, and Andrea Potsrow describes it in the treatise as being the kind of scene that you could use for a religious festival. So you would set it up in a church and it would draw you into the space, would represent just tiny little figures. You'd have to crane to see the figures in the middle of the architecture of Christ healing the lame man. But Potsrow, because of his use of space, he draws you into this. But this same scene was copied. Potsrow says in the treatise that you could also use it at the end of a long view or in a garden. And it's actually used in exactly that way in the English College.
But how has it been kept all these years if it's out in the open?
That's one of the problems. It hasn't really been kept. And in fact, right on top of it now is repositioned one of the Gothic windows from the 15th century church of the English College, which I think was only actually put on top of the fresco in the 1960s. It's a real shame. It's in a very poor condition. You can see it when it rains because the colours of the frescoes stand out from the wall again. It was certainly there by the first decade of the 18th century when we know Andrea Potsrow was actually working in the college. But the reason it's there is because, going back to Cardinal Howard, the buildings of the college had been remodelled. Before Cardinal Howard, the approach to the garden was along its long axis, so you would come through a loggia and you would see a fountain at the end of this long space. But because of the redevelopment of the site, the main access to the garden swapped sides, and it was actually through the narrowest part of the garden. So the entrance to the college now is a very long, very beautiful, elegant corridor. It's wide enough to get carriages down, though I'm not sure if that ever would have taken place. Then it opens at the end to the garden, and straight in front of that opening, you would have been able to see it from the main entrance to the college, is this garden fresco. And I think it's designed to trick your eye when you actually enter into this newly reconceived space of the English College.
So they do have their trompe-l'œil at the English College?
They certainly do, and I'm about to share it with the world.
I thought it was time to ask the obvious question. Was Andrea Potsrow more of an artist or an architect?
That's a favourite question for art historians and architectural historians. What is an artist? What is an architect? In the 17th, 18th century, they were quite different things. Studying music, grammar, mathematics was part of a jolly good education. So these things weren't separated in the way that they are today. Andrea Potsrow, being a Jesuit, had access to some of the finest libraries, to some of the greatest minds in Europe, and he travelled around a lot. He was talking to people, he was picking up the most modern ideas. But if you combine his gift as both a mathematician and as an artist with the opportunities that he positioned himself into, turning up in Rome and making himself available to work in any Jesuit church or college, these things combine to create an incredibly powerful and mathematically accurate, but that's secondary, an incredibly powerful spiritual experience. It's not a manipulation of the viewer, it's designed to excite and inspire the viewer.
This amazing cultural backdrop seemed daunting. I wondered if Professor Richardson found the approach to Pozzo intimidating at all at a personal level, or indeed if she had any advice for the spectator.
You could find him very intimidating and confusing if you tried to understand his use of mathematics. I find him incredibly approachable. Take time to look closely at the faces of the angels or saints or just bystanders that he includes in his frescoes or oil paintings. They're people who were around him at the time. He's using a gift of observation, looking at what's around him, coupled with a very theoretical gift of being able to depict three dimensions on two dimensions. And the two things just come together so powerfully and seamlessly. You're not always aware of what he's doing to you, but you have to think about what's the physical space and what's this spiritual space. It's almost as though he can take quite a small room and he can increase the volume. He can add air into a room.
He carries you along with him to higher spheres.
Absolutely. If you want the theory, it's usually described as using mathematical perspective, which is based on Alberti's single-point perspective from the middle of the 15th century, all very technical. But then you have to ask, well, what's the point of that? And it really is, what is the point? And the point is the point of infinity. And the point of infinity is God.
Not a way of defining the divine, Professor Richardson tells me. That would be too constructed. What it is a way of expressing and sharing the most incredible vision and ambition for humanity. A vision the Jesuits took with them to far-off lands, as far as the Chinese court in Peking. And my thanks there to Art History Professor Carol Richardson of the Open University in the UK. One of the speakers at this conference, focusing on the figure of Andrea Pozzo, which took place at the Pontifical Gregorian University here in Rome. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.